I'm Jack Grisham, and I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. It doesn't feel good right now, but I'm sure it'll feel good afterwards. But and this might be like probably the quickest talk ever. I got a beeper. My wife's getting ready to have a baby any second. And direct result. And so she told me, she said, I don't care how far into it you are, the beeper rings, you're leaving. And it's good to be here, and it's really good to be sober. And I got in a big argument with my sponsor, well, as much arguing as I could do with my sponsor today about this. And because I don't like doing it. I don't like doing it. It's like you get into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And they tell you, get out of self, get out of self, get out of self. And they train us to get out of self constantly. You know, it's not about you, champ. Not about you. You know, and then get out of self, get out of self, get out of self. Go talk about yourself. What? You know, wait a minute. That didn't work. You know, and what I wish they didn't instead, you know, I wish they'd cut these speaker meetings off and invite people out to come pick up cigarette butts, because I'm like probably one of the best cigarette butt picker up guys in AA, and I straighten chairs like nobody. I'm a perfect chair straightener guy, and I'd much rather come and do that. So next time you need one of those, I'll be glad to come out. I took my first drink at 9 years old, and you know, it's funny because I got a 12-year-old now. You know, and we had a little beach party for her last night. You know, and I took my first drink at 9, and so she's 12. And sometimes she'll go, hey, Dad, you know, can I walk down to the pier? Can I go, whatever? It's like, yeah, go ahead, have a blast, you know. And then she comes home, and when she comes home, I give her that hug, you know, the sniff, sniff hug, you know, like the little hug and sniff, you know, what's up, you know. And, you know, because I knew what I was doing, you know. By that time, I was into it. You know, I was going. And I ran off. You know, it's funny. I talked to my mom, and she was going, do you remember when you ran off with that carny? And I was about 11, maybe 12 years old, ran off with a carnival worker. And they didn't even call the cops. You know, by that time, my parents had given up. And they just let it go. I came back a couple weeks later, you know. And besides being an alcoholic, besides taking that first drink, I'm a total hypochondriac. You know, I got it all. Anything that comes out, I got. You know, they had that encephalitis thing in New York going on with the mosquitoes, you know. And we were in New York a couple months ago, so it's like, oh, my neck's hurting. You know, I'm reading about it in the paper. And, you know, when the pigs got sick in the Philippines, all of a sudden I got a backache. You know, all that going on. And what I did when I was a kid is when they showed those films, when I was growing up, they used to show these films. They were great, like the great scare films that they'd show in school. You know, it's like if you drank, your kidney just blow. Boom. You know, a couple of drinks, kid, your kidney's gone. You know, and it's going to blow. You know, and if you smoke pot, you're not going to be able to breathe. And if you take acid, you're going to think you're an orange. And it's like, I bought it. You know, it's like, I bought it all. I believed it. And the way my alcoholism worked out, and the selfishness, self-centeredness being the root of my disease, whether or not I'm drinking or whether or not I'm doing anything, that's the root of my problem. I've had it since I was born. You know, and sometimes I hear people say, well, I started drinking when I was this age, so I've been to this many meetings, now I'm equal. It's like, I'm never going to be equal. I started thinking like an alcoholic the day I was born. You know, I'm not going to get equal. And, you know, I still think bad. And most of my worst ideas come non-drunk. And anyway, so I believe that stuff. You know, when I acted out, I got the privilege of being kicked out of every school in the Long Beach School District. And, you know, I got my first arrest when I was 13 years old, a vandalism charge. And I always felt that I was different. And I loved, you know, our 10-minute speaker was talking about some of the problems that go hand in hand with alcoholism. And a lot of it's the physical and sexual abuse. And that's what happened to me as a kid. You know, there was a lot of physical abuse and a lot of sexual abuse that went on in my house. You know, when I came from a big family, there were 5 kids, mom and dad, and my dad was a career service guy, like hardcore. I don't know if you ever saw The Great Santini, but it's like that was my old man. You know, I used to have my head shaved, and when he'd come home, Jack Grisham reporting for inspection, sir, you know, and I'd have to salute him, you know, and he'd check my room, and my dad was a drunk, and he was good drunk. He was better drunk. You know what I mean? You know, you prayed that dad came in, you know, sauced, because he was good sauced. You know, it's when he wasn't drunk. You know, that was when you had to duck and run, you know, when he hadn't been drinking. And when he drank, it was better. You know, and my dad came to these meetings on a court card. It's like I always go out of my way. I look for business guys, and I always go out of my way to say hi, because I wonder if anybody ever said hi to my dad when he came in, because he didn't make it. You know, he came in on a court card, went back out and drank, and ended up dying from this disease. But Anyway, go back. Came from that family. Total physical abuse, sexual abuse going on in that house. Incest, all sorts of crap was happening, you know. And I was acting out, you know, and getting kicked out of all these schools. And feeling different. They talk about us feeling different constantly, you know. And I was a great chameleon. I could hang out with the jocks, and I was a jock. I could hang out with the smart kids, I was a smart kid. The loadies, I was a loadie. You know, it's like I could do it all. You know, I'm a salesman. I'm an alky, you know, and I could fit in with everybody, but I didn't feel like I belonged, but I could con you into it, you know, getting kicked out of all those schools and on and off, you know, I would drink, you know, or get high. I heard the one lady identify as an addict and I love that. I heard this great thing one time because I came into this program as an addict, you know, and I heard this old timer say one time he goes, he wants the addicts to stay. If they come in, you know, then you're welcome here. You're welcome to stay. You know, we want you to hear what's going on. And we want you to learn about the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're just an addict, we want to help you get to Narcotics Anonymous. And help out. And what he said on this thing, he said, son, he goes, I'd much rather be having you at the podium talking about dope and me sitting in the front row than me sitting up at the podium talking about booze and you out there ripping off my apartment. Yeah, I love it. You know, I love it, man. And I stayed. And I learned that I was an alcoholic, you know, and did that drinking. And you know, they talk about, and I didn't believe I was an alcoholic when I got here. Yeah, I don't think anybody does. You know what I mean? I mean, we may say we are, but I don't know if we believe it. But I didn't believe it, you know. And I had to look back. And the first time, you know, we talk about that compulsion and that obsession, you know. And when I got here, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not like you. I'm not an alcoholic. But I had to look back, and the first time I ever had that compulsion and that obsession was with cooking spray. And it was with Pam, vegetable shortening, and alcohol being cunning, baffling, and powerful. It called itself Pam and hid in a can. And I was at a party, and it's not drugs, and it's not booze, it's just Pam. So I say, you know, the guys are spraying it in a bag, and so I say, can I try that? You know, it's like, yeah, I'm a little kid. You know, I'm like 12, 13 years old. I got hair down to here. I'm like, what's a little surfer kid, you know? And so they break out the Pam, and so I get it in the bag, you know, and it's like, you know, the walls are going, oh, my God, can I get another? And I have another, and then I have another, and I finish off that can of Pam, so I need some more Pam. I know where to get it. Mom's got Pam, so I go to my mom's house, and I finish off mom's Pam, and the compulsion and the obsession kicked in, and I was on a Pam run, and it's 10:30 at night, and I'm walking down the street, knocking on doors, going, my mom's baking cookies, got any Pam? And the funny thing about it is I ended up doing a four-step before I was even on the program. I was in health class, and out comes scare film about inhalants, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm in the chair just having a panic attack, you know, watching this film, you know, they're carting bodies off, and I'm watching the film shaking, and they stop, and the teacher goes, any questions? I go, yeah, and I raise my hand, he goes, yeah, Jack, and I go, I've been doing Pam, you know, I think I got a problem, you know, so I a little fourth and fifth in health class, that's, you know, crap I do, you know, 13 years old, I got my first arrest, and I've been arrested 30-something times since then. Like I said, in and out of schools, you know, I was constantly getting kicked in and out of schools. I was good, you know, and people liked me. We're likable guys. Alcoholics are likable people, you know, and we're always getting a break, you know, and people are always giving me a break. And coming from the sexual abuse that had gone on and how I felt inside, you know, I felt awful. I felt sick inside. My body didn't matter. I was getting the hell beaten out of me at home, you know, getting tied up at home, getting whipped with Hot Wheel tracks till I was bleeding, and that's what was going on at my house, you know, and I felt like crap. And you know, back then they don't treat, you know, child abuse like they treat it now, you know, and I remember, you know, that one of the way they started to find out something was going on is one of the noon aides reached out to give me a hug, and I cowered from her, you know, because I thought I was going to get hit, you know, I didn't know she was going to hug me, you know, I thought I was going to get hit, and I got in trouble in school, and they called everybody in. It was a big deal. You know what I mean? It's like they got the principal there. They got the cops come in from outside. You know, I had hit a kid in the head with a tray at the lunch line. And he deserved it. He was a bully. And he was picking on the kid behind me. And I just turned around and just let him have it with those green trays right in the head. So a council needed to be called. So they call everybody in, the crossing guard, the cops, you know, it's a minor assault. And I'd done some other things. And the reason why I was even at that school, because I got tested with a high IQ. So here he is, I feel different, I don't feel like I belong, and all of a sudden they give me a test, and they say, you don't belong, you're different. It's like they're confirming it, you got to go to this school. So I went to this school, and that's where the transplant happened. And they got this thing, and the cops come in, and I couldn't believe it. One of the cops was even sitting back with his jacket open, with his little gun there. It's like, what are you going to do, shoot me? I'm in sixth grade, man. You know, it's like, what are you doing? And they did this thing, and they said, and by the way, your son said this and this. And right when they said that, my mom got up and she walked across the room and she punched me in the face as hard as she could in front of these people. And I just put my hands up and looked at them. You know, it's like, what? You know, look. You know, and they're, the way they dealt with that is they just stopped calling home. You know what I mean? Just don't call home anymore. And I didn't feel good about myself. You know, and on and off I drank. You know, and back then I was a periodic drinker. When I drank, I drank. You know, I got drunk. And then I'd stop. I'd get panicked and stop. You know, and anyway, that's what was going on. And I didn't like myself, and I didn't feel good. You know, and with that low self-esteem or no self-esteem, if someone was kind to me, I treated them like hell. Because I knew what I was. I was trash. You know, that's what I've been told my whole life. I knew what I was. I was trash. And if you liked me, you were stupid. And I made you pay for it. The coaches that gave me a break, I was great on the swim team, you know. They were constantly giving me a break. I'd never show up for workouts. I just burned them out. You know, I burned them out. I could have got a scholarship for swimming. I burned it out. You know, all the people that tried to help me, I used them. I stole from them. I used them. And the people that didn't like me, those were the people I wanted to impress. Those were the guys that I had always tried to impress. You know, those ones. You know, and the minute they liked me, I burned them. and that's what was going on with me. You know, and when you mention that, the cool thing about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is because of this program and because of the steps and the principles involved in this program, I've got a 12-year-old girl that's never got her hand laid on her from me. And coming from a physically, sexually abused family, if I was still drinking, that little girl would be getting raped and beaten. Because that's what happens. And today I reach out for that little girl, and when I reach out, she sticks her arms back to give me a hug because of this program. But I want to go back. I was drinking, I'm getting kicked out of school. And I got involved in punk rock. And when I got involved in punk rock, it was unbelievable. It was so good. It was about 1977. It was right when it was starting, 77, 78. I was stealing. I was robbing. And this girl goes to me. She goes, I know some guys that are just like you. She goes, you should meet them. So we met at her house, and they were just like me. I was stoked. We talked about all this stuff, and we ripped her off that day. We ripped her off. We left. We went and started a band. And I started this punk rock band, and it was, you know, I'm just fresh out of high school. You know, I'm fresh out of high school, and I'm in this band, and I'm getting paid to rob, pillage, and steal and get drunk and be an animal. I was getting paid for it. You know, it was unbelievable. And the crazier I got, the bigger the band got. You know, the more stuff I did, you know, and I feel bad. I've lost a lot of friends that have been, like, in big bands, and I know what they were going through. Because the thing they were going through is they didn't have anyone telling them, you know what, it's not cool. It's not cool what you're doing. Because that's what was going on with me. Any crazy thing I got involved in, I was the man. You know what I mean? It's like I'd go out drinking and I'd get in a fight with the police. And then I'd come back the next night, Jack, what's up? I saw you last night. You know, I'd drive my car into somebody's pool or into a house or something. It's like, you're the man. You know, it's like, you know, I got stitches. I'm in another fight. I'm arrested again. And I got juice. You know, I walk in and it's like people know me. I walk in places. You know what I mean? You're the man for doing that kind of crap. You know, and they were just letting it go. Everything I was doing, they were letting it go. And just constant negative stuff going on, you know, just having nervous breakdowns from all the violence and all the hate and all the arrests that were happening, you know, anyway, in 1984, I quit that band. It was huge. The band was going great. We're selling out the Hollywood Palladium constantly. I'm selling a ton of records, you know, and I just quit. In the middle of it, I quit because it was going good. You know, things were going too good. I got to sabotage it. In the middle of it, I just walk away. And at that time, my dad died. That was really tough. This thing I had with my dad, you know, that great Santini son kind of thing, you know, it's like, to me, my dad was God. You know, that was it. He was in control, you know. And it's like, I remember one time when I turned 18, I got arrested for this trespassing charge, and my buddy goes, are you going to call your man, you know, are you going to call your dad? I go, are you kidding? I'm pleading guilty, man. He goes, what? I go, I'm staying here, you know. Don't alarm me. I'm staying, you know, because I knew what was going to happen, you know, and so I pled guilty, and they sent me off to county, and 3 days later, I get a visitor, and it's my dad. He goes, why didn't you call me? I would have got you out. I go, hey, I'm 18, man, and I'm going to stand here, eat bad bologna sandwiches, and hang out, and I'll see you when I get out. He goes, well, I'll be here to pick you up, then we'll settle up. So I did jail time and got my ass kicked in the parking lot. But I'm saying that's the effect he had. I was, you know, what I mean, I'd rather go to jail. than deal with him, you know, and kick me out. It's like, what are you going to do to me? You know what I mean? Kick me out. You know what I mean? Maybe if you whipped out the Hot Wheel track and started beating me in your office, maybe then I'll think different. But you just kick me out. Kick away. You know, the cops, you know, what can you do to me? I had Dad at home. I knew what I was getting at home, you know. And when he died, I snapped. You know, and just there was no one left in charge of me anymore. And that little kid, that sexually, physically abused kid that I was, had grown into a 210-pound animal. You know, and I was fighting constantly. Back then, punk rock wasn't cool. You know what I mean? Now you see Sprite commercials, the kids with green hair. It's like, oh, it's cute. Look at John. He's got green hair. You know, back then, having green hair wasn't cool. And, you know, just going to the liquor store was a big deal. You know, it's like I'd wake up in the morning, you know, and I got, like, a nice dress on and pink hair or something, you know. And I'm going to walk up to the liquor store to get a little booze, you know. And it'd be like, I'm going to the liquor store. Who's coming? And because you knew if you're going to the liquor store, you're going to get in a fight. You know, you don't go to the liquor store looking like that without getting in a fight. And, you know, so there was a lot of constant fighting going on. I had my head shaved. You know, I'm fighting constantly. And he died, and I just snapped. You know, I started beating on my mom, started beating on my sister, started beating on anybody I came in contact with. You know, and I used to have an older brother that my mom used to use as like an enforcer kind of guy. And when I do something wrong, you know, she'd tell my brother, you know, Don, kick his ass, you know, get him, you know. And I remember one time we're sitting in the kitchen, you know, and I had done something wrong. And my mom goes, Don, get him. I go, yeah, get me. Come get me. And you know, because my brother was a hippie. He was into, like, quarter flash or whatever he was into. And you know, so, you know, it comes at me, and that was it. And you know, I kicked the hell out of him in the kitchen, you know, just stomped the hell out of him. That was it. You know, that was it. Nobody's in charge of me anymore. And I started drinking more and more. And I used to have that list. I had that list of what I'm not going to do. Well, I'm not going to drink booze because my kidney's going to blow out. Well, I drink it. My kidney's good. Booze is good. But I'm not smoking pot because I don't want my lungs stopping. You know, so I'd smoke a little. Pot's good. You know, I'm all right. They're still going, you know. But no pills. Pills are bad. You know, a couple pills, all right. Pills are all right. You know, and the list just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know. And I kept adding more onto it, drinking more, more trouble, more arrests, more and more and more, all this stuff going on, you know. My dad died. I started snapping, you know, and drinking more and more and sabotaging myself. I had overlapping girlfriends constantly. I couldn't stand being alone. You know, they talk about this being the disease of loneliness, you know. And that's how I felt. I was so stoked one time. I heard Judy Garland used to make, like, 3 a.m. phone calls, you know. Like, so I used to make 3 a.m. phone calls, you know, to Jim from kindergarten. I haven't seen in 18 years. You know, what's up, Jim? I miss you, man. You know, those kind of calls. And I thought, oh, Judy makes calls. I make calls. I'm like Judy, you know. And I couldn't stand me alone. I always constantly got somebody with me, got a girlfriend with me constantly. If not that one, I had one before that one was gone. I just had the next one going, you know. And I used to have this big friend. Well, I still have him. But I used to drink with him and get in fights with him. This guy is huge. You know, he's got no teeth. Teeth are knocked out. He's got, you know, the F word tattooed across his stomach. You know, he's like, you know, arms like this. And that was my pal. I'd run and hung out with this guy, you know. And he's huge. And he used to come over like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning because he knew I couldn't stand being alone. So he'd knock on my window. You in there, man? You know, I go, yeah. He goes, I'm coming in. And he'd come in and he'd curl up on the floor next to my bed, you know, just to make sure I was okay. And one time we got in one of those fights, those drunk fights, you know, you're both crying, you know, and you're fighting, you know. And he looks at me and goes, you know what, sucker? He goes, I'm not going to be your emotional tampon any longer. You know, and that's what he did, you know. He came over, I dished it out, he sucked it up. And that was what was going on, you know. And drinking, overlapping girlfriends. I get a girl pregnant. I got her pregnant, I move her in. Move in. You're pregnant, move in. You know, who's going to say nothing? Nobody. You know, she moves in, right? And at the same time she moved in, I met a 14-year-old girl and fell in love with her. And I was gone. My brain had gone bye-bye. You know, like Apocalypse Now. I was Colonel Kurtz. I was bald. I was bloated. You know, and somebody needed to terminate my command. I was out. And I married this 14-year-old. I married her. I ran off. Why? I got the pregnant girl in my house. I ran off and married a 14-year-old. You know, I'm drinking constantly, drinking. And that's when the suicide attempts start, you know. I started getting that depression. I was always depressed. I was depressed since I was a kid. People used to call home and say, hey, I saw your son. Is he all right? You know, but it started, you know. And if I wasn't married with a kid coming, I think I was gay because I'm so heavy of a drama queen, it's not even funny. You know, I like a big production. You know, I like show tunes. And so the suicide attempts got to be big show tunes, you know what I mean? Big attempts. And I like to laugh about this because it makes me feel better, but it's a serious thing. You know, I can't tell you how many funerals that I've been the pallbearer at, friends of mine that have ended up killing themselves, you know, because they couldn't stay sober. They're at that point where we can't stay drunk and we can't get sober, and they're at that point and they don't know what to do and they end up just dying. You know, and I've been the pallbearer at tons of those funerals. You know, about 6 or 7 months ago, I buried another friend of mine that hung himself. And I have it constantly, you know. But that day, here's what was going on. I'm at mom's, and I'm staying at my mother's house. My mom's so sweet, man. And I'm back there, and I'm boarding up the windows at my mother's house out in the back, you know. And I'm in my room with the windows being boarded up. And she's going, "What are you doing in there?" I said, "Leave me alone." You know, it's like I'm boarding up the windows, you know. And I got Marvin Gaye on, you know, and you know, Marvin's got to be on, you know, and he's black, I'm black, he's tortured, I'm tortured, you know, I got Marvin on, you know, and I got to be found nude, you know what I mean? Because that's part of the deal. You got to be nude, and I'm nude, and you got to have the note on you, you know what I mean? You can't, God forbid, they come in, cut you down, and 6 months later they find the note. It's like, oh, is that why? You know, it's like they got to know now, you know, so I got the note on me, you know, pinned, naked with the note pinned, I got the note, I got the noose, and I had this noose. It's funny, I was on the One Day at a Time program before I even knew what that was. It's like, I put up a chin-up bar, you know, we're going to do more physical exercise, less physical exercise. I put up a chin-up bar over my bed, you know, because I'm going to work out, that's going to make me feel better, you know, I didn't do chin-up one, but it was a great place to put the noose, so I used to have this noose up, and I'd wake up every morning with the first word that I'd say, coming to, after drinking all night, would be the F word, you know, my eyes would open, you know, and I'd look up at the noose, should I hang myself? No, I'll go one more day, you know, but this day I'm doing it, I'm done, I've had enough, you know, and I got the noose, and I got the noose, but I couldn't do it over the bed because I'm too tall, so I had to move it, you know, and I got Marvin on, I got the note, I got everything, and I had a couple in me, you know, and so anyway, so I'm up, and I get up, you know, and I got the stool, and I'm on the stool, and it's, you know, what's going on, what's going on, you know, it's funny, I'm like, yeah, you know, I got the thing, and you know, and I used to claim that I jumped, but this being an honest program and having a couple in me, I didn't jump, I think I fell, and I fell, and what happened was the cabinet broke, and I landed on my butt, and I got a big rope burn and screwed my back up, and I was scared to death. Because I wanted to die, but I didn't want to do it, you know, and that's what happened, you know. And I'm going to tell you my worst day because I want to talk about the steps because I don't got much time. I'm drinking constantly, but this day, you know, they talk about here that we need to remember our last drunk. Because if we don't remember our last drunk, we're doomed to repeat it. I can't remember my last drunk. You know, I don't remember it. I added a couple days onto my sobriety because I didn't know if I was drunk or not. You know what I mean? I had to add some on. But I remember my worst day. And my worst day, I wasn't drunk. And I was on the 405 freeway cutting myself up with a razor, and I abandoned the car in Long Beach. I abandoned the car in a park in Long Beach. I crawled down in a sewer ditch, and I crawled up this pipe. I crawled up a sewer pipe, and I crawled back there in the pipe to slit my wrist because I didn't want my family to find my body. And I ended up crawling out of that pipe because I couldn't do it. I was covered with human waste. I had stunk. I was bleeding all over the place. I was just filthy. I was a wretch. I climbed up and I was wandering down this alley cussing at God for sticking me here in all this pain and not giving me the courage to kill myself. And that's how I ended up. And I remember that day every day. You know, I had let my daughter go. That little baby that I had with that girl, I had that baby. And I let her go. I used to say they took my baby away from me, but they didn't. I let her go. You know, they said, "We're leaving." I said, "Good." I didn't want her around. I had the 14-year-old I was involved in. I had drinking to do. I didn't want a kid around, you know. And they took my daughter away. But what I would do is I'd go over to their house. I'd go over to my baby's house at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, drunk. You know, I'd been drinking. I'd be sticking like booze. I'd been on the cocaine, you know. And I'd go over there to that house, and I'd pound. I'd kick in that door, and I'd go in that house, and I'd threaten everyone in that house, and I'd get that little baby out of her crib, and I'd just hold that little baby. And I'd have a bloody nose coming in, and I'd be holding that little baby, and I'd just rock her. You know, because at the time, she was the only person left that didn't hate me. And then I'd slump down against the wall, they'd pull the baby out from my arms and call the police. You know, and that's what was going on in my life at that time. The way I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a friend of mine got busted out in front of the house. And it was great. I was, you know, it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm in my pajamas watching cartoons, getting ready to go out that night. Because you don't go out until the sun goes down. So anyway, I'm sitting there, and my mom goes, "Fitzy's getting arrested outside." I go, "What?" She goes, "Fitzy's going down outside." My friend Fitz, and I peep out the windows. I'm laughing. He's getting arrested out in front of the house, you know, on a cocaine trafficking charge. And so I laugh. So he goes off to Warm Springs, you know, and he's like a little blonde, freckle-faced guy. He's not doing good in county, you know what I'm saying? And he goes off and pleads his short time and goes off to rehabilitation and does his rehabilitation thing. And he comes out of rehabilitation with this walking hand in hand with Bill, Bob, and Jesus deal going on, you know? And, you know, like when the new guys get fired up, they're going to go back and save the neighborhood. It's like, well, that's what Fisk was doing. He comes back to the neighborhood. He's going to start saving. He's healing. And he comes to my house, you know? What's up? You got a problem, man. I go, hey, hey, you got the problem, champ. I saw you go down, you know? I'm good. And I wasn't good, you know? And he talked me into going to a meeting. And I remember walking into my first meeting. It was the Rap Center on 10th and Pine in downtown Long Beach. And at the Rap Center, it's like you were stoked. Like if a girl had most her teeth, you were stoked. You know, it's like, oh, no way. God, she's got like three up front. It's like, you know, it's like that was hot, you know? And I remember walking in there and you know, that laying in the gutter and looking down, you know, I walked into the Rap Center, loser. Oh, scumbag. No, that guy from school. I'd never get high with him, not like him. Oh, these people are jerks. I'm out. I'm on my own on this one. And I'm going to stop, because I took a look back, and yeah, maybe I was drinking every day. You know what I mean? Maybe I was having a problem with the pills, you know, and whatever. So I'm going to stop on my own. I don't need a program, whatever cult thing you guys got going on down there. I don't need that. You know, I'm going to stop on my own. I stopped. I stopped for 30 days. 30 days. But the deal was, I had stopped for 30 days, but I didn't have any spiritual defense against that first drink. I was just not drinking. And on that 30 day, I had a job. I got a job as a bartender. I thought that'd be a good job. Got a job as a bartender, and I was going on my first day to work. I went and stopped by to pick up some mushrooms for a friend. And I went, and I got to explain this mushroom deal. I was giving this talk, and I was talking about the mushrooms, and I wasn't thinking anything of it. And this lady comes up in a walker afterwards, you know, and she goes, Jack, loved your story, but what was the mushroom deal? Were they bad? I go, yeah, they were bad. She goes, did you get them from Ralph's? She got sober before mushrooms were popular, I guess, you know. And anyway, so I went over there, you know, to get some mushrooms for a friend. And while I'm sitting there, I'm bragging about how sober I am. I'm bragging. You know, I'm sober. You know, and I'm telling the guy, I don't drink. I got 30 days. I'm not getting high. I'm not drinking. Is that your bong? I got alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful, called itself Skunk Bud, and jumped into this guy's bong. And I reached out and took a hit of pot. And I said, oh, my God. I just took a hit of pot. Give me a drink. Because I'm not stopping, you know, and I blew it. You know, I blew it, so I might as well take a drink. Well, since I just took a drink and smoked some pot, I might as well eat a gram of shrooms. So I eat a gram, I hang out, a little more pot, a couple more drinks, I might as well eat another gram, I'm a big guy, eat another gram, you know, and walk out to the car, you know, I'm still not coming on, so I eat another gram, drive to work, introduce myself as a new guy, and I got my tie on, I'm looking good, you know, and I'm still not coming on, so I eat the rest of the bag, two more grams, and I'm back there cutting up some limes, you know, having a nice time with the limes, and I thought, you know what, he burned me. Guy burned me. It's no good. No good. Those mushrooms are no good. So I go call this guy on the phone, right? I call him up. I go, you burned me. He goes, what are you talking about, you burned me? I go, they're no good. He goes, what do you mean they're no good? Mushrooms are no good. He goes, what do you mean they're no good? I go, I ate the whole bag. I'm not coming on. He goes, hey, you just left my house like 15 minutes ago, man. I'd lost track of time somehow. And I said, I got to go. And I hung the phone up. And when I hung the phone up, the little rubber grabbed that thing, that the phone bent in the middle, and it just grabbed that thing, and it made the happiest little rubber sound you'd ever heard in your life. When it grabbed, oh my God, I go, I'm done. And I walked out and started serving drinks.
are 5 books and it's coming to total 16 volumes.
Did this guy get in?
I think so.
Or did he get cut off?
It said it was done, I think. At least whatever sound it made, I was going to be done.
You weren't paying attention to what he was saying?
I was at one point, and then I remember it going off. What is the story end like? Do you remember? I heard the part about when he threw his drink in the guy's face.
Carl Lewis's face.
But I don't remember the part about his daughter and all that.
That just seemed like it would only be 30-some minutes. I thought I would have to turn the tape over. Well, I guess that's it.
Started serving drinks, and I got in a fight with Carl Lewis, the sprinter, and Carl Lewis wanted a drink. So I'm pouring Carl a drink. I go, "What's up, Carl?" He goes, "I'm not Carl." I go, "Yeah, I'm cool. I know you're Carl." Pouring him a drink. He goes, "I'm not Carl. Give me my drink, man." I go, "Carl, I'm cool. Don't worry about it, man." He goes, "I'm not Carl. You're Carl, man. You want your drink, Carl? You want your drink? There's your drink." And I took Carl's drink and chucked it in his face. And you know, they talk about alcoholics being quick thinkers. Thinking back now, this thought that I had must have been in a millisecond of a minute. Because I threw the drink, and the drink's coming out of the glass real slow at Carl, you know? And I'm watching it go at him, and it's coming out real slow, and Carl's not moving, right? And I see the drink hit Carl in the face, and I go, "Oh, my gosh." I go, "If that was Carl Lewis, he would have moved way faster than that." And that was in the space of a second. You know, needless to say, I was fired. And the whole point of this story is I ended up on the street, and one of those loser scumbag guys from Alcoholics Anonymous came by and got me. He got me. He took me home. He saved me. Right? I talked to him the next day on the phone. And I know what I'm going to hear. I talked to him. I go, "Hey, Don, man, how you doing, man?" I go, "You know, I was pretty hammered last night, huh?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, "You know, I was hammered, huh?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "You're an alcoholic, Jack. That's what you do best. You have the disease of alcoholism. You cannot stop, and if you stop, you cannot stay stopped on your own power." I had never heard that, because what I was waiting to hear from this guy is, "Jack, you're a scumbag. Jack, you're a loser. Jack, you lost another job. Jack, you went to jail again. You're a scum. You're a loser. Another job, another this, burned someone else, screwed someone else." And what he told me is, "I have a disease, and it was out of my control and out of my power." And I had never heard that in my life. And I wish to say that that guy is still here with us, but 2 weeks later he decided to go out and shoot heroin for the first time, and he overdosed in the car. And he went out on a relapse and he died. And since then I've lost close to 60 friends on this program in the time that I've been sober. I bury friends at the rate a couple a year, you know, and they just keep coming. They're the people I've lost because of this program. And I had to hang out and I had to get involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. A lot of time new guys come in here and we just tell them don't drink. And to me, that's not enough. People told me, "Don't drink constantly. Jack, just don't drink." Well, it was like that Nancy Reagan thing, you know, when she said, "Just say no." I had like a little shirt that said, "Just say thanks." "Oh, thanks." You know? Yeah, it's like, you know, to get involved in the program, get involved in those steps, you know. And I only got a couple of minutes, and this is the most important part. And sometimes I get carried away at the first, because it's funny, but the steps are what's the best, man. And it's the program, and it's what saves my life, and it's what keeps me sober, you know. Number one, admit I'm powerless over alcohol. I didn't admit it into my innermost self until I was a year and a half sober. And I heard Scottish Alex with the eye patch, you know, I don't know if any of you guys ever heard him, but he said between drinks was his problem. When he drank, he was a hail fellow, well-met kind of guy. And when I heard that, I said, "That's me." You know, when I had a couple of drinks, I liked you. You know what I mean? I'm a visiting drunk, and you know, I drink at the bar, and then I walk down the street, and I see a light on. "Hey, hi." You know, come up, knock on the door. "Hey, what's going on in there?" "You know, I just wanted to say hi." You know, I'm a nice drunk. You know what I mean? A couple of drinks in me, and I like you. You know, a couple of drinks and a couple of pills. V&V was my favorite drink, vodka and Valiums. You know, and a couple of pills. You know, and a couple of drinks, a couple of pills. I want to give a big hug. A big hug, you know, and I want a big hug. A couple of drinks, a couple of pills, and a line of cocaine. I want to start a business with you, you know, and you take it out of me, and I'm that scared, beaten, raped, abused, alcoholic kid. You take that out of me and I want you dead. I don't function well when you take the booze out of me, you know, and I didn't get it. What do you mean I'm powerless over alcohol? Alcohol makes me feel better. You know, it always worked. When I drank, I was gone. I didn't have those feelings anymore. I got sober, now I got them. What am I going to do? How do I deal with it? When I heard that, I accepted that first step. And every day I live that first step, admitting that I'm powerless over alcohol the minute I wake up in the morning, and admitting that my life is unmanageable. It says it in the A, B's, and C's before they say that when we do the reading. It says our personal stories before and after admit that no human power could restore us, that God could and would, and that our lives are unmanageable. Before and after, not just while we were drinking, before and after. I admit it every day. That second step, coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And what I learned is that you guys could restore me this sanity. And the sanity that they talk about in the big book is not that I'm going to have stop dyeing my hair. You know, my license says other under hair color because I change my hair all the time. You know, and, you know, I like to wear my pajamas and slippers to meetings. You know, and I'm not going to get sane that way. But the sanity that they're talking about in the big book is the sanity, the insanity that I can sit here and talk all this AA stuff and then walk right out of here and think that I can go into a liquor store and get a bottle of booze and take a drink and it's not going to have the same effect on me that it had the last time. That's the sanity that they're talking about. I realize that. And by coming to these meetings and every day hearing about alcohol, hearing about the disease and staying in the front lines of alcoholism and losing those friends, I know it. This is where I'm restored to sanity. It's through you as my higher power. You know, and that's step three. Turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood them. For me, what I had to do, I had trouble with God. When I was out there, I prostituted myself. I ripped off churches. I dug up graves. I'd done all that crap, you know, and I didn't want anything to do with God, you know. But I could turn my will and my life, what I was told was my thoughts and actions, I can turn my thoughts and my actions over to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can think like you think. I can do what you tell me to do. When I finally accepted that third step when it came to God was when I was about 9 years sober. And it was that little girl I had, the 12-year-old. Because of making amends to her, you know, because of making amends to her mom and paying my child support, she let me have my daughter, in fact, to come live with me. And this woman, if she never let me have that little girl again, I wouldn't blame her. I put her through hell. I'd fist fight her when she was 8 months pregnant, you know. And she gave me my little daughter back. And my daughter was rolling smokes one day. And she was rolling smokes out in the garage. I'm not even going to go into her actually smoking them last week. But she was rolling smokes. And I walk out in the garage and I catch them. And they're rolling smokes out there. And I'm pissed. You know, I walk out here, the kids are in the garage, you know, paint thinner, you know, they're rolling smokes, you know. And it's like, oh, my God. You know, and I'm mad. You know, I take a step back. And I do that 11th step. When agitated, when we come agitated, we go to God. We ask God for that divine hunch, that inspiration, you know. How am I going to handle this, you know? Because what used to happen to me, if I got caught rolling smokes, I'd get the hell beat out of me. You know what I mean? I'm coming out of it with a broken arm, you know. And I, because of the program, I'm not abusive. So I step back, I do that prayer. And I walk in there and I said, sweetheart, look, I don't like you rolling smokes. And let me tell you what happened to me when I was your age and I started doing that. And I talked to her with love. I told her I didn't approve. I treated her with love and I didn't beat her and I didn't lay a hand on her. I walked out of that garage and I had this feeling that came over me. Because my parents were like God. And what I was learned that any God that had anything to do with me, he wanted me dead. He just hadn't got a chance around to it yet. You know what I mean? But I was done. You know, I knew he wanted me. You know, and I walked out that garage, and I thought about it. And I thought, that little girl, you know, I love that little girl so much that I'd never want to see her hurt. You know, I didn't walk in that garage and catch you rolling smokes and say, you know what? I caught you rolling smokes, so I'm giving you cancer. I caught you rolling smokes, so I'm going to kill your mom. I caught you rolling smokes, I'm going to give you AIDS. I caught you rolling smokes, I'm going to make your life hell. What I did is I walked in there and said, I caught you rolling smokes and I love you so much, sweetheart, that this is what happened to me. And when I walked out of that garage and I thought about that, I thought about if I'm a human being and I love this little girl so much that I'd never want to see her hurt in any way, I thought, how much does God love me? And when I thought about that, I knew that I was forgiven. And I knew that I was forgiven for everything I'd ever done. And I could turn my will and my life over to that God. But being human, I'm not strong with faith, and I have trouble with faith. So what I do is when I'm not feeling comfortable with my God, I use you guys as my God. I use my God through you, and I'm able to turn my life and my will over to what you guys tell me to do. And I've been able to do that. And I got a couple of minutes, I don't know. These steps are so important to me, and getting people involved, I love it. In the big book, you know what? They talk about in page 292. They talk about a guy that went to Dr. Bob's house, and he had 30 days of sobriety. And at 30 days sober, Dr. Bob took him through the six steps at that time, what they had. They didn't have a chance. They didn't have new guys back then. They didn't have old guys back then. You know what I mean? It's so great now that we can see someone work, you know, the 22 years for a birth. I mean, it's unbelievable. We can see that work, and they didn't have it. All they had is them and someone else. If a guy had 6 months, he was the champ. You know, it's like they had to get it going now. They couldn't waste any time. Look, you got to get involved now. You got to get involved in this program now. And it talks about Dr. Bob taking this guy through the steps in 30 days. He had been 30 days sober, and Dr. Bob ran him through the steps. And that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And they did it in the afternoon off. You know, he didn't say, hey, work on step 1, and next year we'll catch you for step 2. You know what I mean? It was now, champ. You're going to die. You do the steps now, you get involved in the program now, or you're dead. Go out and drink or do what we do. That's what they used to do, you know, and that's what I was taught. And that's what I do with my guys, you know. And the coolest example of a four-step I've ever seen in my life, you know, because what I was taught, you sit with your guy when he's doing a four-step. You don't send him off, you know. Some of the stuff we come in with, you know, we got people coming in here raped. We got people coming in here with all this crap going on. And to just tell a new guy, hey, go home and write about, you know, your uncle raping you, champ, and we'll see you next week, and you come read it to me, you know. That's like saying, here, take a gun, go out and shoot yourself, and go get drunk, you know. And what I was taught was that you sit with them. You sit with them and you go over that four-step together, man. And the best example of a four-step is a Christmas carol. We're coming up on Christmas, and a Christmas carol with Scrooge is wonderful. It's unbelievable. He's one of us. He's a son of a bitch. They just don't show him drinking. You know what I mean? I just wish they would have, you know, had him staggering out with a bottle saying, F you, Tim. You know, and he's got the crutches there, you know, and they didn't. But he was one of us. You know what I mean? There's no doubt about that, you know. And what the spirits did was took him through a four-step. That's what they did. They came in one night. You know, Ghost of Christmas Past didn't come and go, well, next year we'll come back for the rest. You know, it's like, yeah, wait an hour, champ. Someone else is coming after me. You know, and they ran him through. And when you do that four-step, it's ego deflation. You know what I mean? It's ego deflation. I never once got my ego busted and felt good about it. You know, that feels good. You know, it's like, no, I'm wrecked. He was wrecked. Scrooge was wrecked. At the end of the deal that night, he was wrecked. He was done. He was on his knees saying, please, please, I'll change. I am sick and tired of being a tornado running through the lives of everyone I've ever come in contact with. Because that's what I had done. And when they got him to that point, they had him to the point of 6 and 7. When you finish that four-step, you've seen what you've done to everyone you've come in contact with, your family, your moms, your kids, anyone you've touched. My 9th step is the phone book of Long Beach, because that's where I live, man. And I saw that, and you do that four-step, and you look at it, and you get on your knees, and you say, God, please take these from me. Please take them. I do not want to live like this anymore. You know, I got my buddy Kevin that's with me tonight, and he came to me the other day, and he says, Jack, I do not want to live like this anymore. One more time, Kevin OD'd. One more time he died, and one more time they're pounding on his chest to bring him back to life. You know, and he says, I don't want to live like this anymore, and I know what he feels like. You know, and that's what he felt like. And to launch into this program, you know, immediately. You know, and I'm out of time, and I'll say this last thing and shut up. I was so mad at this guy last week. This guy, I know he's had 10 years of sobriety, you know, and he was going out of his mind, you know. And I said, look, you got to get involved. Go down and help new guys. You know, go get involved. Go get out of yourself. We got the disease of selfishness and self-centeredness. Go get out of yourself, you know. Go help new guys. Go listen. Go do whatever. And he talked to somebody else, and the guy told him, wait a minute. You can't give away what you don't got. You're out of your mind. Go study yourself. Then you can help the new guy. You know, it's like, what? You know, there's no way I'm going to get out of self by studying self. It just ain't going to happen. The only way I'm going to get out of self is getting out there picking up cigarette butts. You know what I mean? It's like, and to get involved and to help out and to give away. And these new people, when you got one day, you got one day more than the guy that comes in drunk. You know what I mean? You can get involved. You can straighten chairs. You can take commitments. You can pick up cigarette butts and get involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you get involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you will not drink. It's a guarantee. You will not drink. If you do what we do and live how we live, you will not drink. And there's this great thing in the Bible, man. This guy's walking to Christ. And his son's sick. And his son's dying. Right? And he wants to walk to Christ. He walks up to Christ. He says, Rabbi, will you come back and heal my son? My son's dying. Will you come back and heal him? And Christ says, go back. It's already done. He's already healed. And that's what this program's about. You start walking and the healing will get done. That's what it is. Don't wait and pray for it. Just get out and do it. Pray and do the work, you know. And if you're new, please stay. I love the program Alcoholics Anonymous, and my buzzer hasn't rang. So, you know, so I got one more day with a 9-month pregnant wife that's out of her mind. But I love it. The blessings that I'll get and the blessing I got from this program is that little girl, that 12-year-old girl, has never seen her dad drunk. She's never been hit. She's never been punched by her dad. You know, I got a beautiful wife. It's got a 9-month baby coming. You know, my mom calls me her best friend today. I haven't been in jail in over 11 years. And I'm involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I do not drink one day at a time. And thank you for having me.